Welcome to our first episode of the Leaders Table. I'm your co-host, Ricky Villanueva, alongside Chris Lipscomb. Before we dive into our first episode, I'd love to share our mission and our core values of our podcast. So our mission here in this podcast is to inspire others by highlighting real stories and adversity that leaders face today. One of the things that we realize is as leaders, we have seen the very real impact that you can have on others through sharing your story. We saw the need to share the real adversity leaders face today in a real and authentic way. In our core values and the lenses that we really want to present to you from here on out in our first episode is courage, curiosity, authenticity, and service. And with that said, it's my honor and my privilege to introduce our first guest, someone that I am happy to call my friend, Thomas Overby, the owner-operator of River Landing Inline in Miami, Florida. So thank you for joining us, Thomas.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here.
Well, awesome. Well, I'm going to kick it over to Chris. Chris will kick us off with our first couple of questions, and we'll kick off our first episode.
Awesome. Thanks, Ricky. Thomas, I just wanted to start by asking a simple question. What brought you to Chick-fil-A originally?
Yeah, nothing fancy at first. This really is a paycheck, honestly. I started working at Chick-fil-A my senior year of high school. And I definitely quickly fell in love with the first thing was really the leadership team that I was serving under. They were awesome. So came for the paycheck, but stayed for the development and the culture. And obviously continued to love it more and more.
Awesome. What made you pursue Chick-fil-A owner operatorship and that franchise opportunity? What kind of clicked for you and what kind of made you decide, you know what, owning my own business through Chick-fil-A that's what I want to do?
Yeah. So a lot of it does go back to the leaders I was working under at my first opportunity at Chick-fil-A restaurant. I was just really blown away by their ability to show care for myself, the other team members, as well as the customers. But also they were really relentless in their pursuit of excellence, really focused on execution. And I just thought it was unique and fascinating to see the holding both those things at the same time. I know Ricky will back this up from our time together. I talk a lot about trade-offs from an operator. I learned a lot about how really everything does have a trade-off, but I thought it was really great that they weren't trading off either of those two things. They were really great at both. And that was probably the most fascinating thing. And really just the more I spent time with leadership at Chick-fil-A, the more I learned about the culture and the history, the more connected I felt to it, and the more fulfilled I felt kind of carrying that out in the restaurants I was working for.
Yeah. Was there a moment or a story that comes to mind that kind of nudged you in that direction to start the application process to apply for Chick-fil-A ownership?
Yeah, so I worked for Chick-fil-A. I started in 2012, and I worked, I was selected in 2020. I believe I applied in 2018. So I was working full-time, and I had two jobs for most of my time in college, so it took me 7 years to graduate. I'd always planned on going through LDP just because I was young, and that was kind of the path that was laid out. So if you want to be an operator, you go to LDP. But then when I finished my degree, there was three or four stores coming to the market in Miami that I really wanted to be in. And there wasn't a whole lot of interest at the time in the Miami market. And it just felt like the right time. And we'll probably get into this a little bit later. But during my pursuit of the operator opportunity, there was a season where I felt that all I had done was Chick-fil-A, or all I had done is restaurants. So I'd bus tables at other restaurants. And I wanted to kind of branch out. And the thing that I loved most about what I was doing, the thing that was energizing me the most, was leadership development. And I saw a big need across the chain at all the stores I'd been working with for some patterns and some rhythms that work to develop frontline leaders specifically. So I started a company to kind of help operators craft their own vision for what they want their development to look like, and then also execute it. And then as well as if they were kind of, hey, I want you to help me make the vision. I would kind of provide some things that I've seen work or what I think would work for their restaurant based on getting some other teams. So as I was doing that, just learning about the opportunity in Miami and decided that it was a really good time. So couldn't hurt. So applied and was really, really blessed and lucky to have been selected for like that first, not the first wave, but like the first wave in a while of stores coming to Miami.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing. So you talked about the selection process or you applying. There's some restaurants in the Miami area that really kind of piqued your interest. Can you talk about just how you felt during the selection process, you know, talking to other operators? It can be a stressful time. Some operators have even said, hey, enjoy it. I'm curious, what was how did you feel going through it? And maybe even what advice would you give to a young entrepreneur or an LDP participant maybe going through the process for the first time?
Yeah. So for the Chick-fil-A process, I think the best thing I can say is just be yourself, just be authentic. And that's one of your core values. I think it's really important. I think it's really easy. When you want something really badly, to try to be what you might think someone's expecting of you. And like, A, that's not good. It's not good for your mental health. And B, it's also, if you feel the need that you have to do that to get selected for anything, really, you probably don't want to be there long term, not because it's a bad place to be long term, but just because you might have there might be something else that energizes you more or on a deeper level. So the biggest thing is just be yourself. And also, I think if it weren't for the selection process, it kind of kickstarted some parts of like my self discovery or self awareness journey. So I would say just like kind of lean into that. If you're not learning more things about yourself as you're going through the process, you're probably not taking it quite seriously enough is I guess the best way I could put it.
Awesome. So you talked about how be yourself, right? You know, sometimes that's a cliche, but I don't think it makes any less true. And then be authentic. Can you talk about how you remained authentic and yourself in what most people would describe as a really stressful process of getting selected for your dream opportunity? What are some things you did to help ground yourself and make sure that you stayed authentic?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just practice. Good practice. So having someone that knows you well enough to kind of push on you a little bit. So for me, that was my wife, Heather. I can't like the amount of times that we would like go on a walk after I got off work or go on a walk, just do something. And she would have a list of questions or some prompts that we thought would be helpful in preparing me for the interview process. And you kind of do catchers. If you do it enough, I think anyone will start catching themselves slip into answering the question the way they think the asker might want to hear it as opposed to the genuine answer. And I think the more you do that, you kind of have to walk through the messy, genuine answer before you can find the genuine answer that is representative. I want to focus on that for a second. Like, don't figure out how to dress up genuine if genuine is not what Chick-fil-A is looking for. If you find as you're going through this that like, hey, my genuine answers aren't a good fit, then you should think about doing something else. But I think most people that find themselves prepping for an interview is probably not the case. So those messy, genuine answers are kind of, you kind of need to say them out loud to hear them, to think about them, to process them on like a deeper level and think through like, okay, why did I do that? I'll give you one example. Like one question I was asked, I think we can all resonate with like you answer a question in an interview and you're like, ooh, I feel like that probably wasn't a good answer. One thing I was thinking about is after one of the operators I was working for, he was selected for a relocation while I was still going through my college degree. And I was at this crossroads where I kind of decided way too quickly that I wasn't planning on working for another operator. I think arrogantly I decided that. And until I said that out loud, when I was asked that question of like, why didn't you work for the operator? And I heard my answer, I was like, man, that's pretty arrogant to think that like, I'm not going to find another operator that is going to give me as much ownership and development as the one I was working for. And it wasn't true. I ended up working for another operator later down the journey while I was doing the consulting. But until I said that out loud, and it allowed me to kind of think through it and how to process and share that part of, at the time, I did think I was a little bit arrogant in my thought process, and I made that decision too quick. In hindsight, like what I learned from that was, just because you had a great operator doesn't mean you can't find other operators that can help complement your journey, or you can add tremendous value to their business, and that's also growing the brand in a meaningful way. So, I hope that kind of gives a little bit of guidance. The biggest thing to wrap it up is just reps, practice, but like have meaningful reps with someone that knows you well enough to kind of push on those uncomfortable parts of you to help you discover them if you've kind of been ignoring them.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you. So you talked about starting your own business, right? And really seeing there's a need in not only Chick-fil-A, but just I guess the restaurant industry for leadership development and coaching. I'd love to just hear from you. What did you learn from this business startup? And how have you seen that impact the way that you lead in your current restaurant?
Yeah, I feel like if you ask me this question, like four different phases of like me being an operator, and even before I got selected, I would answer it differently. So currently the way I'd answer it, one of the first things it did teach me that I did really want to be an operator. I felt like, so I was consulting operators and their teams. So what that would look like is I might meet with the operator once a month, and I'd meet with their directors like biweekly. And I really enjoyed it, but not in the same way that like I didn't get to touch enough of the talent in the business. I kind of felt like I was just assisting, which is like, I enjoyed the assisting piece, but I really did want to create jobs in my community. And I felt like my capacity to do that was very limited in the role I was in. So that was a learning. And then the way it affected like me going into my own opportunity, I think at first I really just took everything I was doing there and just try to keep iterating on it and making it better and better and better. I do think that I have learned recently that a lot of the stuff that I was speaking about in a way that was like prescriptive, it's not as prescriptive. I do think that like, and Ricky can attest to this, like our own talent strategy around developing leaders, even the time that he was with us changed. It went through several like iterations, and it's gone through probably even more like recently, just because, so I do think what helped me in the business was that the business I started before the coaching business was it got me used to like things not working and then having to pivot. And that's probably the part that helped the most. It wasn't necessarily, I get the question a lot like, oh, do you just do everything you did there for your own team? And it's like maybe for 3 months until it wasn't working anymore. And then we had to do something else. I would encourage anyone that is facing a season of like just feeling stuck with like how to develop your talent and the type of talent you want to develop. Just because it worked in the past doesn't mean it's going to work like in the future. And especially as you're dreaming bigger and bigger about like, I do think that like when I look back, well, currently I'm not like we're not happy, really is the best way I can put it. The most blown way I can put it. We're not happy with where our talent strategy around developing leaders is at. The quality of our leaders now are better than they've ever been. So it's like that can be true at the same time that the way we're currently doing it, we're not happy with. And I think that's just this, like, it's a good thing. It's like you're dreaming bigger. You're understanding more of what you want in a leader in your restaurant. And that's okay. Doesn't mean the leaders you have are bad. Doesn't mean that the directors that develop those leaders are not doing it right. It just means that everyone's priorities are changing because the seasons are changing. During business.
How do you know how to or when to pivot in that kind of season, right? I think it could be a little hard where you're like, you know, it may not be working, but is it that I need a little bit more time? Or is it where you're just like, hey, it's time to pivot. I know this is not working. More time is not really going to help it. Now, what does that balance look like?
I think that's really a question. I wish I had the answer. Is the best way I can put it. But I guess what I can describe is like the things that you should see that are kind of warnings that it might be time for a change. I think if you're consistently drained by like that thing in your restaurant, whenever you have eyes on it and you're experiencing it and it's not something that you're excited, if you find yourself not telling people about it, it's probably not something that you're really happy with. Especially if it's something that you used to brag about a lot, where it's like someone's like, hey, what's working in your business? Like, I can't wait. I think everyone has that thing. Like, what's working? What are you loving doing? Everyone kind of has their stock answer to that, and it changes over a season. So if one of the things that used to be that answer is all of a sudden not that, or someone asks about it and you're like, oh man, like, it probably means that you have some more thinking to do about your vision. But I do think that's the first step, is like, if you're not happy with the current reality, don't just start changing things. Like, figure out what you don't like about the current reality. Figure out what you are working towards, the profile of, like, so talking about leadership development, but it's true for anything, like whether it be food safety, leadership development, sales, like whatever the vision you're pursuing. I think it's really important that you get clarity around that first. And I think if you do that, then like the action steps will like kind of scream at you from there. If you just take what's currently happening and compare it to that vision that you drummed up for whatever that thing you're looking to change is, the action items will come. So if you're starting to get a little bit disappointed, discouraged, stressed out, and unclear, like lack of clarity for me is a big sign that it's like, I know I'm not happy, but I also don't know why I'm not happy. It's kind of like, where you're like, if I look at what's happening, they're doing the thing that we're supposed to be doing, but the results are not yielding what I wish they would. Those are kind of what the signs look like. But the next step is just trial and error. Sometimes you'll stop doing it and you realize, oh wow, we only tried that for 3 months. Maybe we should do it more. Like, and you realize that you just go right back to it. That's learning, yeah. And that's growth, and that's good. So there's an element of trusting your gut. There's also seeking wise counsel too. Like, hey, do you think this is a good time to stop doing this? I've had some operators tell me when I asked them, they're like, you should have stopped doing this thing ages ago, or the vice versa will say, like, stick it out a little bit longer. Like, you've only been doing it for 2 or 3 months. And knowing yourself too, that's where the self-awareness comes in. If you know you're a historically impatient person, give it a little bit longer. If you know you are historically a person that hesitates to react for way too long, then maybe do it a little bit sooner than you did last time. And then eventually you'll find, I think if you do that enough and you show up with your full self to work enough, it'll kind of, you'll find that right rhythm for you.
For sure. Awesome. I think that's great advice. Thank you, Thomas. Yeah. Definitely appreciate that. And as you think through it, and for those that are in those seasons trying to figure out in that moment, it's like, hey, what, right? I think you nailed it, where it's like, if you know that you normally take a while to make a decision or make those changes, you should be aware of that. And I think what it comes back to is just knowing yourself and knowing where you, your team, and where you're at in your leadership journey. But so thank you for sharing. I'd love to pivot just a tad here. Yeah. I'd love to talk about this. I think this is one of the things that I definitely wanted to hear. You know, I was in it with you, but I'd love to hear your perspective. But I want to talk about the unique challenges of the restaurant from opening projections, right? Yeah. And then your actual sales. I'd love to just hear, it's like, what were the differences and how did the team adapt? How did you adapt as the operator from going, hey, here's my sales projections, and then it's blown out of the water completely?
Thankfully, we weren't like the first store in the market to open like after COVID really happened. So we kind of knew that was the trend of going over projections. So we were projected around maybe 3 or 4 million. And so I figured, I think we'll do close to like 6 or 7. I think like double those projections is kind of what I anticipated, just because of the area and the high potential for like digital sales, because it was really in like not only a food desert, but like a Chick-fil-A desert. And it was in downtown Miami, which is like one of the most populated cities like in the country. There's a lot of people there. And there's a lot of people there that already know Chick-fil-A because they maybe went to school somewhere else and they're working like at an investment firm or for something in downtown Miami. So we ended up opening, I think, like around 12 million the first year, or the first, like in the first 12 months, I guess, P12. And it was really difficult. One of the hardest things was staffing, because we're an inline. So we kind of came into an existing space, and just talking to other operators, it's a lot. Like they had a much easier time finding talent when there was literally nothing, an empty lot. And then over months and months, you see a Chick-fil-A kind of be built from the ground up. It gets the community buzzing about it. People tell their friends about it, who tell their friends about it, who who tell their kids that they should apply. We didn't really have that. So I think we started hiring like six, I think it was supposed to be 6 weeks, ended up being 8 weeks out because the recruiting got pushed. And even then we barely got 80 team members like in the door to open just because the combined with like the volume. Plus I think most operators are and should be like very selective, especially for that grand opening crew, because I think culture is a lot easier to kind of, it's like planting anything where like you plant something, you kind of need to really, really pay a lot of attention to it when it's just goes from the pot to the ground. It's very fragile, very like susceptible. If it's a windy day, you might be dead. So that's kind of what the new restaurant culture is very fragile. So I think operators should be pretty selective with that talent at the beginning, because who knows how long you're gonna be paying the consequences for like a short term of like, okay, well, they're not a great fit, but they have experience in fast food, so I'll bring them on board. So that was really difficult. Thankfully, we were able to get some additional support, like for an additional week of training, just because we were so over projections. And then thankfully, once we were open and selling chicken, a lot more people were applying because they knew we were open. But I don't think it took at least 6 months, if not more, to really start to get to a decent rhythm where it's like, okay, the people coming in know what they're doing. We don't have to be like coaching them nonstop.
Oh, for sure. Awesome. Thank you for sharing. So as you think through, like when you decided, hey, I don't want to lower our standards for hiring, what were those standards that you had put in place? How are you making those decisions? What were you looking for in team members that you knew were going to be valuable to your restaurant?
Yeah. So there's two books that really helped us like craft those like non-negotiables, I guess, when it comes to selection. One is Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh. And then one is The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. And The Infinite Game talks about, it's kind of like a, So we don't have like a vision statement or mission statement. We have a just cause, which is from that book. And our current just cause is we pursue a world where everyone is energized daily and feels like they belong. And so that's one like pillar of this is our business. And I'll share in a moment how that affects selection. And then for Delivering Happiness, I love the way that he talks about core values. He says like really the only purpose of core values is you hire and fire on them. So, and our core values are we value excellence, care, stewardship, and feedback. So whenever we're interviewing a candidate, especially at the beginning, and I think it was hardest at the beginning just because we had those things written down, but we didn't really know what that translates to in a restaurant. Like we had a guess. So if we interviewed someone, and I think this was like one of the questions for a long time. I don't know if we ask it anymore just because people don't really understand what we're asking, but I think we went as far as to ask, would you be willing to make personal sacrifices to pursue a world where everyone's energized daily and feels like they belong? And if there was any, and based on how much hesitation they have, like you can kind of tell, like, are they hesitating because they think it's corny and lame? You probably don't want to hire that person. Or are they hesitating because they were just kind of blown away that you asked them that kind of question? Because that's not really a common question you get and like a fast food interview. And then also asking them a lot of story-based questions of times they demonstrated those values. So like trying to see if they have some stories of when they showed care to someone, when they really pursued excellence in what they were doing. And if that's something that comes naturally to them, then it's a no-brainer hire. And if it's something that they know the definition of, and they kind of know what we're asking, but they're honest and like, I don't really have a story off the top of my head. We'll kind of help them out a little bit. But the real red flag is if you say, tell me about a time that you pursued excellence in what you were doing, and they share a story that's just completely the opposite of the definition of excellence that we have. That's kind of like that. As much as you might need those two bodies to open, like don't hire that person. Like it's not, all you're going to do is spend a ton of money on the uniform, a ton of money on training them, just for them to convince a bunch of people that you love to quit, and then you fire them anyways, and you have the same deficit, if not more,
because your culture is shot, right? So,
exactly. Yeah, but that's especially hard at grand opening. Like, so I would say you're gonna get it wrong enough with the people that you think are good you don't need to have those people not work out and the people you knew weren't going to work out not work out.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing, Thomas. Yeah. I've got one last question for you before I kick it over to Chris here to finish us off today. Love to hear, maybe you have multiple here, but what was one of your most difficult moments that you have faced so far in your Chick-fil-A operator journey?
Yeah, there was a season in, man, I almost forget how many, like, it feels like yesterday, but I feel like it was close to 2 years ago now, where we were shut down for 2 weeks, like completely unexpectedly. Like the long story short is there was like a miscommunication from our landlord to us, to the city regarding like the specs of our grease trap that was completely unbeknownst to us because it was changed without our knowledge before we even got into the space. And that caused them to say, hey, like this isn't right. So you're shut down until you can update the paperwork. That was really, really hard because it was very like out of nowhere. We're just doing business as normal. Someone from the city comes in and is like, stop selling chicken right now. And it was shocking and it was really unclear, I guess, the path back. Because as far as we were concerned, like we literally passed the dye test. It's working fine. We've been cleaning it for over a year at that point. We're like, what do you want us to show? It's just paperwork. And then just trying to hunt down if like if it's just paperwork, like, can I go to the city today and we'll be open by 5 p.m.? And it ended up being 2 weeks we were shut down. So it was that unknown factor of we're not changing anything physically. We're just updating some paperwork. But it can take a long time based on your city. So the hard part about it was we're trying to keep everything ready to open. So we need to be thawing chicken. We need to be having people expecting to come to work because we don't know. Like it could be tomorrow. It could be what ended up being 2 weeks. So it was really difficult, like for me just to have the restaurant be closed. Like that's just a really unsettling feeling. And knowing that you have over 100 people that are expecting a paycheck. So I decided to pay the whole team. And then we did a lot of like community service. We were like, hey, show up to your schedule shift and your shift leader or your director that day you'll go to the beach and pick up some trash. And we'll pay you to do it because we're going to pay you anyways. We had some fun things where we were watching a movie. So we watched like Moneyball, which is like a really, really fun movie that has a lot of business implications that kind of asking the team like, hey, what stood out to you with this? How can you apply it? So we try to make the most out of it, but it was really, really difficult because I feel like most operators, like they're used to being able to apply effort and solve their problems. And this was one of those things where no matter how much effort I applied, it wouldn't. I think I spent like the first 3 days just bouncing between city offices until they kicked me out. And then eventually I got a call from Chick-fil-A like, hey, trust the process. Like you don't have to be there every day. But it was hard for me. Like I think most people that are operators and really anyone that is entrepreneurial or if that's something that's energizing to them, like they want to see a direct correlation to their effort to like their desired outcome. And when that's not there, it can be really mentally frustrating. So that was probably the hardest part. And then also just like the fact that we were like, it could be tomorrow. It could be who knows when.
Yeah, so many different moving parts, and even within those moving parts, it sounds like there's that feeling of like helplessness, a little bit of that, right?
Oh yeah,
where it's like, man, there's nothing that I can really do to get the outcome that I want, and sometimes, especially for those that you're like you said, are entrepreneur, want to see your effort correlate with the result. But mm-hmm. Awesome, thank you for sharing, Thomas, and I'll kick it over to Chris for our last couple of questions.
Thanks, Ricky. Thomas, yeah, a couple more questions before we go. First question is, what myths would you like to bust for people that are wanting to pursue a opportunity with Chick-fil-A as a franchise owner, or just people who are interested in wanting to pursue entrepreneurship? What are some things, what are some myths about those opportunities that you would like to bust?
Yeah. Oh man, let me see. So I guess the first thing I'll shout out as I'm kind of thinking through how to answer that question is the book, The E-Myth Revisited. It kind of really is all about that. Like the E in E-Myth is entrepreneur myth. And like one of the first things the author kind of tackles is like it's not entrepreneurs that typically start businesses. It's what he calls technicians. And then the author kind of goes through these three different hats that every leader needs to wear, especially they're going to be entrepreneurs. The technician hat, where it is, man, I'm really, really good at this. I could do this on my own. And then the managerial hat, which is the kind of owning the moving parts and the systems and processes and accountability. And then there's the entrepreneur piece, which is that vision casting and dreaming and how you communicate that vision down, how you assemble a team around that vision. So I think my biggest myth I'd like to bust is I don't think anyone gets to always wear the entrepreneur hat. Like there's varying seasons. Like there are some operators that I'm sure, not that I know, but I'm sure there's some operators, that jump into the entrepreneur hat day one. And it's just not the right season for it. And they get their butt kicked because the business needed a really good technician because like they got slammed with volume and, but there's a lot of difficulty in like, if that person wears that technician hat forever, they're going to like the business is going to outgrow them. So like really figuring out what your business needs and what season, like the season we were closed, like there wasn't a day I put on that entrepreneur hat. I was putting on my technician hat, just trying to go to the city and learn what I need to do to get open. Like just knocking on doors, basically like doing the stuff that doesn't require a lot of mental work, but does require a lot of willpower and effort. So I think the biggest myth is you always get to wear the entrepreneur hat. Like once you start wearing it, you never have to stop wearing it. But I would say once you feel like you're wearing it and things are getting better in your business, defend it. Because the second you have to start changing that hat more and more, I'm assuming that, like, I don't know, Ricky can probably attest to this, like not that great at the technician or manager hat. So like I'd prefer to be wearing the entrepreneur hat because I might make some really rash and bad decisions if I'm wearing the other hats. So assembling a team around you that you can lean on so that way you can do the thing that adds the most value to the business. But at the same time, if the business and your team is kind of screaming at you like, hey, we need you to show up in this different capacity, like that shouldn't be ignored. And if you do ignore it, you'll probably find yourself wearing those other hats for a lot longer than you'd like.
Wow, that was great. I think I learned a lot. You said that was the E-Myth?
Yeah, E-Myth. It's really, really good. He talks, and that's just like the tip of the iceberg. Like that book is amazing. It goes into a bunch of really good stuff. Yeah, huge fan. It's one of those books I think, like it's been, I think saying it now, it's been too long since I've read it. Like there's a couple books that are like on my reread list. There it is right there, yeah. Like Multipliers is one of them. Good to Great is another one that like every time I read it, there's so many takeaways from it. I think E-Myth is another good one. Especially if you feel like your season has changed since the last time you read it, I highly recommend like picking it back up.
What advice would you give owner operators, business owners, entrepreneurs who, like you said, you're more gifted when you're wearing the entrepreneurial hat, right? And you maybe your strengths maybe don't lean towards the technician or towards the, what was the third one?
Manager.
Towards manager. What advice, encouragement, feedback would you give entrepreneurs or business owners who are in a season that is just not their strength and it's maybe taking longer than they hoped to get to the entrepreneur? What advice, support, encouragement would you give them who's living in those seasons?
Yeah, I'll preface it with, I do think what would get me through that season is going to be different than what gets someone else through that season. So I would say if someone listening to this is in that season and they just do what I'm about to say, if it's not working, stop doing it. Like do something else if it's not working. But for me, I think like embracing realities is a really good thing. Kind of as opposed to getting frustrated, like kind of shelving that part of you that's frustrated that things aren't the way you wish they were. Because that's not necessarily that helpful. And this, like that frustration is not going to help you make it better. If anything, a calm, cool, collected leader that knows the next steps they need to do, that will help solve the problem a lot faster. And it'll probably give you a lot better of like a day-to-day life as opposed to just getting frustrated every day. that's the worst. And then I think the other piece is, like having like this might sound kind of lame, but like don't wrap your identity up in the thing you're trying to make better. There's probably like an uncountable amount of layers to every person. So just because one element of who you are is not how you want it to be, does not mean that you should let that weigh on you to negatively affect and ripple into every other element of your life. So it's a marathon. Like if you're in one of those seasons where you need to make a big, big change in your organization, maybe it's a brand new organization and you have this big, big vision, but you know it's going to take a long time to get there. Knowing it's a marathon and learning to hold some parts of the journey a little bit more loosely is really helpful. Building a good team around you, I think, to encourage you. Like not just a team that's really, really smart, but a team that you like doing work with. Like if I have a team full of the smartest people, most talented people in the world, but I hate working with them, like, I'm going to hate what I'm doing and I'm going to burn out really quickly. So just really keeping a good pulse on your own mental energy to make sure that you are able to see it through. And I think the last piece is maybe like revisit your vision, like not necessarily revisit to change it, but take a day to let it kind of encourage you. Like, hey, this is why I'm doing this. Like, I do believe that we'll get here. And maybe you go to revisit it and your vision does change and you do want to modify it. I know for us, Ricky, you might remember, I forget what our just cause was when we opened, but I know we changed it. I can't remember the first one.
Yeah.
So like, I was just thinking really hard and long about like our current, like the rise of the restaurant. We were very like, I think we over-indexed on execution and excellence to the point that the culture suffered. And when I say suffered, I mean just wasn't in line with the type of culture I wanted to create. So how can we balance both? And that's when we ended up changing the just cause. And it felt a lot more personal to me and made me, it's like when you update that, I promise, like the next steps are just so much more clear. Like you might find yourself in a situation where everything is not working. It might just be because your vision isn't really what you want to pursue anymore. So update it.
Thanks for sharing that, Thomas. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up our time, this is going to talk a little more about, I don't know if we shared this in the podcast, but Thomas, I think you started working for Chick-fil-A pretty early, right? Pretty young as a team member. Is that right?
Yeah, I was 17 years old when I started.
Okay. Yeah, you beat me by 1 year. My question is, what advice would you give teenagers or young professionals in their first job or young professionals looking to just take the next step in their career? It could be someone who's maybe in a Chick-fil-A restaurant or just working anywhere who wants to be in a program like the leadership development program at Chick-fil-A, or they're thinking about starting their own business. I guess start first with what advice would you give those teenagers, like kind of in their first job, and then the advice to the young professionals looking to take the next step in their career development?
Yeah. I think that there's a lot, so I'll try to keep it concise. You got to be intrinsically motivated, but like also start slow. There's nothing that frustrates me more when I hear someone looking for an opportunity, whether it be in my restaurant, it be somewhere else, be someone that's in the operator candidate pool that's asking me like, how can I be a better candidate? And there isn't really a desire. There's a desire to get the position, but there's not a desire to become the type of leader that should have that position. So it's, what do you want? Do you want the title or do you want to actually learn and grow as a leader? I know for me, and I feel like it's probably even more true the more time goes on, like I hated learning, like genuinely, I hated it. Like I had bad teachers, maybe I don't know what it was, but either way, like my position towards learning and growing myself was a very bad paradigm. And I think until I committed to the process of learning and growing myself and seeking out resources that would help me be better at like tackling the problems I was facing, that is when the growth was kind of independent of my circumstance. So if you're in a situation where you feel like your growth is limited by the opportunity you're giving, or you're being given, whether it be by an employer, be by whatever it is. Ask yourself, like, am I taking it upon myself to develop myself in the type of way I want to be? And if the answer is no, start there. Because that will probably be the thing that helps you get to where you want to be more than anything, any opportunity someone could give you. If someone gives you an opportunity to be like the GM of a restaurant and you want to be an operator one day, that title means nothing if you're not growing and learning within that role. And even if you are growing and learning within that role, if it's your operator or your leader or your boss that is kind of spelling out for you what you need to learn and grow in, then your growth and development stops the second you stop working for them. And you're gonna have a really hard first, however many years as an operator. So like, do it for you, do it for the type of person you want to become. Don't do it to, I did this really bad. Like, I talk about reading, for example, like when I was getting ready to like go into Chick-fil-A, like learning more about, like what was needed, what was going to be asked of me when I wanted to become an operator. And someone like challenged me, like asked me pretty early on, like, oh, like, how are you, what have you been reading? I was like, nothing. I'm not reading anything. Like, I'm watching a lot of Netflix. Like, that's about it. Like, and to be fair, like, that could be a great source of growth. Like, there's a tremendous amount of amazing sports and leadership documentaries on those platforms. So I'm not saying it has to be cracking open a book in a dim light, smoking a pipe, like in the most boring, stale way. Like, don't, if that doesn't work for you, don't do that. Maybe it's you go on a run, put in a podcast. Like, don't overextend yourself. If you can just create some elements, and Atomic Habits is a really good book for this. It kind of gives you grace to be bad at it, which is, I think, what people need when they're trying to start something new. But do not kick that can down the road. That's the worst can you can kick down the road. Like, oh, well, I'm really busy. I'm in my, like, you think you're gonna be less busy as an operator? Like, you're fooling yourself. Like, you're going to be way more busy. So if you can't find the time now, I'm sure you're going to be able to find the time later. A lot of people aren't really as busy as they say. They're just really accidental with how they spend their time. So be hyper intentional with how you spend your time in a way that if you build that routine to where if I spend my time doing these things, I will be closer and closer to reach the type of leader, type of person, type of husband, type of friend, type of brother, whatever it is you're pursuing, I'll be closer to that type of thing I want to become. For me, the first time it was that eye-opening moment was reading. And if I had to guess, it'd probably be the same thing for a younger team member. So yeah, I hope that helps someone in that season.
Awesome. Thanks, Thomas. You said something that intrigued me. You talked about how sometimes, maybe this is a myth, right? Maybe you can bust it. You said, if you think you're going to have more time when you're an operator or when you're a business owner, you may be fooling yourself.
Yeah.
Can you share a little more about that? Right. Cause that could be a myth, right? Of, hey, when I am an owner operator, I can just kind of wear that entrepreneurial hat all the time. Right. So can you talk a little bit about that statement you made about, hey, it's not like you're going to have more time as an operator.
Yeah. Like, I'll use this as an example. Like your time is absolutely different. So that's not like, that is true. Like the way that the amount of time I spend preparing chicken sandwiches has decreased dramatically from when I was a team member to when I was an operator. There's an unlimited amount of ways you can add value, and it is overwhelming. It's like drinking out of a fire hydrant, and you will have to assess in the season what is the highest return on like my time investment. And I guess the myth that will be busted is like, I don't think there's much higher return on time invested than growing yourself. Like it's at least at the top of the tier. There might be some things that are like in the same boat, but like it's as high as it gets. But the problem with like owning your own business is you have the same amount of time, but a million other things are screaming at you for your attention. So if you're not really good, like for example, if I tell you learning is important, that's one thing. But if you know it's important, what'll happen is when you're in the whirlwind of owning a business, it's going to be much easier to be like aware. Like one thing that I find myself that I'm glad that like this is kind of where my mind's going is when I'm feeling really, really stressed, I say, okay, like I need to cancel my meetings for the back half of this week and the things I'm doing for the back half of this week, because why am I going to go to those meetings when I have no clarity? I'm in a bad mood. Like I need to dedicate the time to get that clarity, to figure out what's going on, to figure out where the disconnect's coming from, because 9 times out of 10, it's me and not my team. But if you don't have that rhythm and you're just used to solving your problems with effort, as opposed to like kind of slowing down and thinking about where the breakdown is. And a lot of it is like finding that breakdown. So whether it be like a book, like a book right now that I'm just started reading is, there's two right now, and I'm kind of overwhelmed because I know both are going to make a big impact. One is Originals by Adam Grant. And one thing we're doing now is I'm realizing there's a huge, huge breakdown in my restaurant for my director team, where a lot of the things that we've called, and Rick, you'll know this, like standard operating objectives and these leading and lagging indicators, like we're performing very well on those, which is, it's great, but I'm realizing I've done a bad job of creating this, the standard and the culture of like, okay, well then now what? Because my leaders are like, now what? Like this looks good. So I'm vetting this book to see, hey, I'm guessing that this book is going to be really good at describing how to craft an original vision that's compelling, that will are like really illuminate and shed light on action items. Like we were saying earlier, like it will scream at you. Like the example I can use that's the easiest is like food costs. Like your food cost is great, cool. Do your team members really appreciate the trade-off of like they can use waste as a lever to have a better customer experience, to balance? It's not just waste as little as possible. It's a very elementary, very basic standard vision. Like you can dream so, so, so much bigger. So how can I help my team? Because me just writing it for them is not going to help anyone. How can I resource them to do it? So it probably took weeks for me to arrive at that point, but it was weeks of dedicated time of really kind of figuring out what is needed. So your time looks different. And if you don't find yourself when you're in those hard situations with uncertainty, going to resources, whether it be a podcast, a book, a friend, another operator, like if you're not finding yourself going there, I think you're going to have I think you'll eventually find yourself getting there. And so I think it'd be better to do it sooner rather than later.
Awesome. Thanks, Thomas. Ricky, I'll pass it over to you. That's all we had in terms of questions.
Well, awesome. Well, first off, Thomas, thank you so much for joining us today on our first episode. It's been a pleasure to hear your story, to just hear some insights from you. It's been amazing, been great. And you and I have spent so much time together that it's still great to even hear a little bit more about what's going on and how you're thinking about the business, right? Yeah. And secondly, just a thank you to Chris. Chris has helped me make this podcast a reality. He's been a great partner. And just appreciate you guys both for being here today. Thank you all that are going to be watching this. Obviously, it's not posted today, but we'll be posted here soon. We hope this episode inspires you guys, brings you courage, and sparks curiosity in your own leadership journey. Thank you all.